Let's go to the phones, let's go to the fun, and let's say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, what do you say?
Who's this?
This is John Lawler.
Hey!
Hey, John, how are you?
John, we didn't even give you the correct intro. We were expecting you about 7 minutes from now. How are you, John?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
We're doing great. We have you on the phone.
I'm just calling you from the glacier up here in Boston.
Ah. Hey, how are you guys handling that snow that you had? How is that going on?
Oh, you know, the best you can do is put one foot in front of the other and just dig a path to your car every day.
I believe it.
It was brutal. I mean, I still have, probably a 10-foot bank where we piled snow in front of my house. But, you know, you just deal with it. We are, in fact, New Englanders, you know. I mean,
so basically,
live with it.
Yeah, you complain about it, right? That's about it.
Yeah.
When I heard the mayor announcing that he wanted people to stop jumping out the second floor window and sliding down these snowbanks, I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me.
This guy's got no sense of humor.
You know, a little toboggan up in the second floor of the apartment could work, even a little sled, something. Yeah, that would work. It's making a new sport. So, John, this is going to be epic because, you know, having you on the phone with your New England accent and having us on the phone with our bastardization of every other accent in the world, whoever's listening, God help them.
No one's going to understand us.
No.
Well, you know, in New England, we sent all our R's to Washington.
Washington.
Okay, there you go.
So where they wash cars and they eat pizza.
Yeah.
You know what? Want to drive one of us crazy? Say, put the drawing in the drawer. No one can say that.
Drawing in the drawer.
Yeah, no one can say that. No one from Massachusetts or New York can make that statement.
Right, the R's are gone.
Yeah, the R's are gone.
We don't need them. It saves a lot of time.
Hell yeah.
So you happen to be the illustrious technical, spiritual, and menu advisor of an unknown talk show from what last we heard, right?
Yes, we're struggling. We're trying to get something off the ground here.
Not bad.
You guys have been doing very well. I mean, very, very well.
Chris and I are both longtime fans of Car Talk.
Loyal.
Very loyal and dedicated listeners. We love the show. And we still listen even to the replays. We still listen religiously. Mm-hmm. And it always made me wonder, just how many weird lunches did you really come back from anyway?
I don't know when that gets... You know, I'll tell you how it gets started. I used to be a policeman, and I worked the midnight shift. Mm-hmm. So we'd do the show many, many years ago. We'd do the show on a Friday night. And I walked in because everybody was just getting through work. So I'd usually bring in some pizza or some burgers. So one night I brought in a bag of cheeseburgers, and we're off to the races. That, you know, a little kindness, and it becomes a weakness, and they're off to the races, you know?
You know, John, I have to tell you, we have some good friends of the show, or people, when they were becoming good friends of the show, would come in as guests, and we invite pretty much everybody into our studio. It's an open door. And they know that Chris and I are both Italians, and we have our weaknesses, so people would come in with boxes of cookies, strudel, we'd have, we'd have cannolis, the Parisi's bring broccoli rabe and sausage and peppers. We had, like, full-blown banquets in here.
And we were thinking of you.
I know how it is, and then I'll tell you what else. You know you're Italian when you can bench press 400 pounds, shave 5 times a day, and still cry when your mother yells at you.
Exactly. Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah. Right, and you can't see past the red ribbon hanging from the rearview mirror, too.
I actually just went in the 80s. I bought the biggest obnoxious Italian horn in Little Italy, when it was really Little Italy, when it was big Little Italy.
Yeah.
And I hung it from the mirror of my Fiat. It was almost as longer than almost hung down to the shifter. But I said, hey, it's an Italian car. It's got to have an Italian monocle.
It's so. It's to play the theme from The Godfather.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
This is a true story. And I have a 1955 Cadillac Fleetwood that was used in the original Godfather movie.
The black one?
The black one.
Wow.
And Ray Magnanti said to me, if you ever want to retire, Bugs, he said, just go down the North End on the days of the feast and say, have your picture taken with the Godfather Cadillac for $25, $35. Name your price. Pick a price.
Right.
But I had to, you had to finish the deal, so I put a horn in it that plays the theme from The Godfather.
Nice. Yeah, that's it.
Beautiful. That's perfect, and he's absolutely right. That car will make you a millionaire probably 3-4 times over.
Oh, sure.
But you'd have to replace the back seat every once in a while. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about you. How about some history before you got to Car Talk? What were you doing before?
I had my own radio show and TV show in Boston.
Okay.
And we needed cars for evaluation purposes up here in New England. So I took it upon myself to go to the Boston Globe, the Boston Herald, Christian Science Monitor, and I said, look, I'll orchestrate this thing, and we'll try to get some cars up here, but we'll do it so that they're all not sitting in front of the Boston Globe for a week, you know, and flipping the keys to the guy that, you know, that goes and gets coffee with it to put mileage on it, because it was my buddy John White in those days, and the Boston Globe was the king. Mm-hmm. So we came to an agreement, and then on my days off, I would go to New Jersey or to Connecticut or wherever the parent organization was for the various car companies, and I'd bring the cars back on my days off. So this is how I got to know the Car Talk guy, specifically the original producer, Dougie Mayer.
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
Dougie Mayer was leaving. He was going to work for, I think the Kennedys owned some radio stations. He was going to work for them. And he said, why don't you come in? He said, they need a technical advisor. They're looking to hire somebody. So I said, okay. So they're telling me the guy's like this, the guy's like that, you know. It took me 25 years to find out I'm the only guy that applied for the job.
That was kind of the same as Tommy's story about how he got the job. Nobody showed up.
Tom, that's a true story.
That's
a true story.
Yeah.
There was a host, so they went in, and one of them went in and did the show and said, you know what, we had a lot of fun. It was on Boston University's campus. BU Radio.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, why don't you come back next week and bring your brother? This was a hoot. Let's do it again. So the following week they go back, and there's a card folded on the desk and said, I quit. You can have the hour if you want it.
Wait a minute. They wrote that on a fish?
No, just on a piece of paper.
You said there was a card on the desk. Really, I'm picturing like an index card.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. So they did the show for years and years and years, and finally they went to BU and they said, look, we'd like to be paid. You know, it's doing very well. We'd like to be paid. So they gave them $25 each. So
wow,
fast forward about 5 years, they won a race. Tommy wants a raise. He said, we were doing this a long time. I'd like to get a little bit more money. So Raymond goes and asks him for more money, and they said, no. So Raymond says, all right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Give my $25 to my brother, and don't tell him. And then we'll keep doing the show.
Okay.
Because Raymond really loved doing the show.
Right.
And the rest is history.
There you go.
Wow. So how did they get from BU to NPR?
They did one spot on Susan Stamberg's radio show, and she loved them. And she said, you know what? I'd like to make you guys give you guys a spot periodically.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it, and it became very, very, you know, everybody loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how could you not? I mean, really and truly, I mean, what you hear is what they are. I mean, they're just the two best guys you ever met.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And so finally, NPR came and said, look, we'd like to offer you your own show. So for a long time, what we were doing was, on Friday nights, we'd do the traditional show live on BU Radio, and then we'd do a second one, which they would take and slice and dice and send it around to all the stations for NPR for the following week. And eventually, one of them had enough presence of mind to say, what are we doing two shows for? We're doing twice as much work. So we did the one show. And that's how we ended up doing it. Now it goes up on a satellite, and they don't have to do what they used to do, mail out the tape copies and so
right.
forth.
Right, right, yeah, because that's what we used to do in the old days when I was in professional radio. Was you'd get a copy mailed to you, and you'd have to play it. You'd hope to God you got the copy in time to play it.
Yeah, that's I think the first show was written on a tablet. I think pretty sure
it was written on flint.
Yeah, well, that's when we kept our chisels sharp and our hammers strong. Yeah.
So we had a good run. We had a lot of fun, more fun than you should have, you'd be entitled to, you know, going to work. That's a word we never used. That was a four-letter word. We never used that word.
Right, work.
We used to play horrendous tricks on each other. We'd do terrible things.
Can we talk about it after the break?
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick break right now. That was a great tease. That was perfect, John. John Bugsy Lawler, the technical and spiritual and menu advisor for Car Talk, is on the phone with us here at Motormouth Radio. That's Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. And, of course, the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour, drivers that smoke cigars in their vehicles. If you notice, it's not a smokestack coming out of the driver's window. It's someone's old Denobile. So when we come back, we'll be talking more with John Bugsy Lawler right after this here at Motormouth Radio. Keep it where you got it.
The radio is tuned to Motormouth Radio with...
Okay.
Tune in to Thunder Road for...
The heart-stopping, pants-dropping, hard-rocking, earth-shocking, booty-shaking, love-making, Viagra-taking, history-making, legendary.
Join me, Kim Tracy, for the music of Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band on Thunder Road, Thursdays at 11 p.m. and Sundays at 1 p.m. on 90.3 WHPC and streaming at ncc.edu/WHPC.
Got a car question? Give the Motormouth a call at 516-572-7440.
All righty, no room on the phones because we have on the line John Bugsy Lawler, the technical, spiritual, and menu advisor from Car Talk, and also all other good stuff. But right now we're talking about that right here on Motormouth Radio with Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. And, you know, John, what does... You would say you guys played a lot of practical jokes on each other. Can throw some of them out?
We had a lot of fun. Well, Dougie was a big joke of the producer, you know, who also produces Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's a lot smarter than I would admit to him, you know.
Yeah.
I'd never say this in front of him. So.
And he's probably not listening to this. So.
Yeah, but I'll tell you a quick story first of how he became the subway fugitive, because it's a good story.
Okay, yeah.
So Dougie's wearing the suit that he wore when he graduated from high school, which has been under the... But in a box underneath the bed for the last 18 or 20 years. So he's going to the station manager's convention in Washington, D.C., which was coincidental with the Million Man March, right?
Okay.
So Dougie goes and he buys himself a cup of coffee, and he's walking down on the platform on the D.C. Metro, and he said a woman came up, looked like a bag lady, and said, "You got to throw away the coffee." He says, "I'm not throwing away the coffee. I just bought the coffee, and I'm not going to drink it on the platform. I'm going to take it to where I'm going."
Mm-hmm.
So she pulls out a badge. She says, I'm with the transit police." And she said, "You're going to have to throw it away, and I'm giving you a ticket."
Wow.
So meanwhile, a guy walks by in a three-piece suit eating an apple, which I think was like a felony. So the next thing you know, the two of them are wrestling around, the guy with the apple and the briefcase and the suit are wrestling on the platform. Dougie had enough presence of mind
to go away,
reach over and take the top ticket off the ticket book and grab his license, get on the train, and bid her a fond adieu.
Now that's probably a felony.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
I think they're still looking for him.
So with that, while we're on that subject of how he got his name, how did you get the moniker Bugsy?
They're horrendous people. That's all I can tell you.
Okay.
There I am showing up diligently for work for low those many years. And as I said, I was a policeman, so I would go to work after I left the station. We'd do the show 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, and I would go to work at 11 or 12 o'clock at night. So sometimes I would have a gun underneath my jacket because I wouldn't, you know, I would bring it with me as opposed to leaving it in my locker.
Mm-hmm.
So they were calling me Bugsy Siegel behind my back, and nobody would ask me why I was carrying a gun. So finally, Jennifer Jiffy Loeb asked me, you know, why I carried a gun to work, and I told her. They all had a good laugh, and that night I became Bugsy on the radio.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Perfect sense.
I heard it, and I just, you know, when your stomach drops and you know you're stuck and you're saddled with something for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
all
too well. Well, that's something we've talked about on this show all the time. We just can't come up with nicknames for each other. We've tried to actually do it, and it just doesn't work. So.
Oh, it'll come. Just don't try too hard. It'll flow.
Well, the ones that have come up, we can't repeat.
Right.
The problem.
It'll come.
Yeah. But the funny thing is we come up with old nicknames for everybody else that calls.
Of course.
Yeah. Everybody else that deals with us or everybody else that calls, we come up with all the nicknames for. So, except for us.
Yeah, we'll come.
Right.
Try not to force it.
We're just the two mooks with mics.
Yeah.
That's it.
So what does a technical and spiritual advisor other than advise, what does he basically specialize in to some gentleman as high profile as...
Yeah, what's on the resume?
Yeah.
How do you sell that?
Coffee.
Oh, excellent. I wish we had one of those guys here.
Because we're trying to figure out, what does a technical and spiritual advisor actually do? What's his responsibility? Nothing.
Well,
you know, you see,
I laughed harder than anybody. Most of the time I ended up on the floor, you know, because they were a riot. But they knew more than I did.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't need me. I think they just wanted somebody there that, you know, in case they forgot something or had to look something up. But, you know, they knew more than I did between the two of them.
It's true, because, you know, we have our eye in the sky, our buddy Joe D. He's our Obi-Don Kenobi, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He's a big Star Wars fan. So, you know, he's pretty much our... you know, spiritual advisor, I would say. And he's definitely our technical advisor. So.
And he's also our menu advisor.
And
too.
He does bring in cannolis, right. So we
doesn't make him a bad guy.
No, it makes him a good friend. You kidding me? Jeez. Wouldn't trade him for the world.
Leave the gun, take the cannoli.
Exactly, yeah. We were just talking about that earlier in the show. I found that I couldn't get out of my neighborhood in Brooklyn because everybody kept getting in front of me. And literally, I had some woman get in front of me with a Honda Accord, and she was backing up and going forward, backing up. I didn't know what she was trying to do. I thought I was Sonny Corleone there for a second. I was waiting for the machine guns to pop out of either side of parked cars and start gunning me down. I'm looking around like, holy smoke.
Hey, it wouldn't be the first time I did the show alone.
I have to watch that movie once a year just because. Yeah. I mean, everything you need to know in life comes out of that movie.
I believe it. Exactly. I believe it. And most of it was, the Brooklyn parts of it were shot close to my house. So.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the toll booth scene was shot right on the property that we're broadcasting out of, right here at Mitchell
mm-hmm.
Field in Garden City. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What's his name?
Coppola?
No, who's keep the gun, take the cannolis? It just popped out of my head. What's his name?
I don't know. I'm looking at Joe D's text.
I forgot.
Clemenza?
Yeah, Clemenza. Thank you. Clemenza's house is literally within walking distance of my house.
That car, his car, is his own driveway at his house. When he came out today with the flower box,
right,
with the machine gun in it.
Yeah. That's
that
yours.
That car in his driveway is my car.
That's amazing.
Oh,
how did you,
nice.
How did you stumble on that, John?
It belonged to the Volvo Auto Museum out in Chicago. I love just looking at their website because they get a lot of movie cars.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would go to the Chicago Auto Show every year, I'd go out there. My buddy Greg Schmitz, who's out there, would I'd say, come on, let's go. He'd go, no, you're going to get in trouble. I said, yeah, I know, but you know that's what I live for. So I'd go out every year. And they had the Bluesmobile, and they had the Crown Victoria from Men in Black. And these cars were cheap cars at the time. RoboCop, you know, with the full body suit and everything. They were cheap cars in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're in the stratosphere. I couldn't afford to buy them.
I believe it.
You know, but it was a hoot going out there. So one night I'm looking on their website, and it was in the wee hours of the morning because I like to work late. And I see this car, and it says that it was used in The Godfather. And the price seemed right, so I called them up the next day, and they said, yeah, you know, we reduced the price on it. I said, okay, it's my car. I said, I'll pay you, but I won't be out to see you for a couple of months. They said, oh, it's okay. It needs some mechanical stuff. They made arrangements to have it brought down the street. When I went out there in February, the first time, I found out why. It had no interior in it.
Well, that's no interior.
After they made the movie, they put it in a barn. They left the windows open, and the critters took care of the rest.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and they love that wool.
It's very good. Yeah, they make every nests and you know everything out of it. But a suit too. I think they made suits out of it.
Oh, they did. Yeah, and bathing suits. If you go back to the 20s, that was fun.
That was fun. A wool suit.
Well, Chris remembers that. I don't.
Yeah, I do.
So, John, you also have LBJ's limo. Is that correct?
Wow.
I do. I have a 1965 Lehman Peterson. He's got a hidden bar in it. The amazing thing is it escaped with the White House telephone in it.
Oh, how?
I don't know why or how, because usually they would cannibalize them before they let them go out to the public.
Right.
This one, somebody had a heart, and they didn't tear up the interior of the car.
Nice.
Wow.
Because Robert McNamara, there were, I think, 11 of them that went to the White House.
Mm-hmm.
They had these little 5-inch black and white TVs in them in walnut cabinets that looked like they were made in your cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Vaughn had one, the man from Uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis had one. Jackie Gleason had one. Ronald Reagan had one when he was the governor of California. This is the only one that had a hidden bar in it. And they really did a nice job with it.
Wow, imagine a Texas oil man having a hidden bar.
What if you
put that thing right out in the open?
Well, I mean, you know, he's on duty.
Well, yeah. Hey, you know what? It's good to be king.
It's good to be king.
You know?
So I get a flyer in the mail probably 15 years ago. It's just a piece of yellow paper folded in threes. I open it up, and there's a. It says 1965 Lehman Peterson used in government service, 33,000 miles. And it was a Florida consignment dealer, and he had Rolls Royces and Bentleys and this and that. So I called him up, and I said, do you still have the car? And he said, we just sold it. It was magnificent. I'll give you the pictures because they're of no use to us, and I'll give you the guy's name, which he did.
Right.
So I called the guy. Guy owns the same 55 Caddy from Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, wow.
Right. So right away we hit it off. So I said, look, if you ever decide to sell it, would you give me an opportunity? He said, sure, I will. So about 6 or 7 years later, the phone rings, and he said, would you like to buy a 1965 Lincoln limousine? I said, what happened? He said, I'm 62 years old. I got two 2-year-olds on tricycles.
Ooh.
And I'm scared to death somebody's going to drive into the side of it. So I bought it. He said, if you don't like it, leave it on the truck. We'll split the freight, and the rest is history.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a great deal.
That is. So yeah. you like small cars, we see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's obvious. Well, you know, perfect segue, John, because you also happen to own a certain Fiat, a Colt Vista, and an MGTD.
I do.
Tell us about those, please.
That's the Car Talk fleet.
Yeah, they sound real familiar.
You have everything but the Dart.
Yeah.
I have everything. Well, the Dart met an untimely demise on the front of a snowplow.
That'll happen, yeah.
There was no way to save that one. Hmm. And the other one that Tommy had that they talked about for years was the Caprice Classic Convertible.
Mm-hmm,
1975
right.
Caprice Classic Convertible.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, it wasn't heavily mentioned, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It literally had a tree growing up through it.
Yeah.
And finally his wife said to him one day, all right, enough already. It's got to go.
Right.
So every time he'd get rid of a heap, instead of sending it to Nissenbaum's, the junkyard, he'd say, hey, Bugs, do you want an addition to your collection?
Yeah. Well, this way you never really have to say goodbye.
You don't.
Right.
You don't.
Oh, believe me, I fall into that camp. I'm the hoarder and the keeper. Chris is the flipper.
Yeah.
I have literally, once I get a car, I get tired of it. It goes right up on sale. And Ray will buy a car and keep it until it's literally dust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know how Ray feels. I never get rid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
I never do.
So you have the MGTD, you have the Fiat.
And the Colt Vista.
And the Colt Vista that you can't get the oil filter off it.
The Colt Vista was Raymond's Cape Cod car. It's been finger painted by every kid in the neighborhood over a period of 20 years.
Great.
It's got seashells glued to it. It's got paint. I got to admit, some of the kids are pretty good, you know. But there it sits. I think of it as a work of art as opposed to an automobile because it's way past that.
Well, yeah, at that point, yeah, it eclipses just automobilia. It becomes a rolling sculpture.
Exactly.
So
it doesn't roll. I don't think it rolls anymore. I'm pretty sure it rolls canardly.
A dragging piece of sculpture. You can always drag it. Hook it and drag it. So, John, as you are the president and the founding member of the Northeast Motor Press Association.
New England Motor Press Association.
And NEMPA.org, for people who want to check it out. And does that play into this weird habit you have of collecting these odd vehicles? Have you been able to parlay a segue into your meetings? I know you have your meetings in that fantastic building that you have up there. It looks like an old firehouse.
It is. It is exactly what it is. It was the service department for the Maxim Fire Truck Factory.
Wow.
And the actual Maxim Fire Truck Factory is the next block over. It's 80,000 square feet. My building is about 13,000 square feet.
Mm.
Thank goodness somebody was looking out. You know the old Paul Newman movie, Somebody Up There Likes Me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, somebody up there liked me because both buildings were on sale at the same time, and they were almost the same price.
Oh.
And I bought the smaller one because somebody came in and bid up the bigger building by a substantial amount of money. And I said, let it go. He's choking on that building today because, you know, good times and bad times, 80,000 square feet. I don't even know how you heat the thing.
That's a lot of building to take care of,
that's
for sure.
That's a lot of building to take care of. So I bought this one. Maxim originally owned it as a Dodge dealer. Until across the street, a Buick dealership opened up, and he said, I'm not competing, you know, where I was first.
Hmm.
So he turned it into the service department for Maxim. Hmm. When I bought it, they were restoring fire trucks, and when I went in there, the day I went in there, they had a fire truck hanging from the trolley in the ceiling because they were doing a body-off restoration on the old fire truck.
Wow. Nice.
It's a really strong. If you looked at it, you'd say, there's enough steel in it for a skyscraper. It's really a one-of-a-kind building.
That's the way they built them back then, steel and brick.
Steel and brick, yeah.
Excellent.
Holy smokes. John, we're going to take one more break. Do you mind?
Not at all.
All righty. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with John Bugsy Lawler, the technical, spiritual, and menu advisor for Car Talk, right here on Motormouth Radio. That's Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. And, of course, you can hear this show on Performance Motorsports Network. You can also hear it on iHeartRadio. Let's take a break, and we'll come back as quick as we can. Talk more with John Bugsy Lawler right after this. Hold on.
WHBC Garden City, New York, the voice of Nassau Community College.
Listen. Join WHPC's Daily News Wrap-Up, weekdays at 4:30 p.m., bringing you a complete report of the day's news home and abroad, as well as sports, weather, and many other informative features.
We're Long Island's FM alternative.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouse a call. 516-572-7440.
All righty. Welcome back to Motormouth Radio. We're not taking those calls because we have on the line John Bugsy Lawler, the technical, spiritual, and menu advisor of Car Talk, and also a whole bunch of other stuff too.
Oh yeah, John, I have to make mention that as the wacky world evolves and works out, we happen to have some very good friends in common, you and us, in the names of Marty Shore, Joe Oldham, and Joel Rosen.
Yeah.
Oh man, I got to tell you, those guys are legendary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Legendary. I did the very first time that Joel Rosen came on the radio. He never did interviews. And Marty Shore was my paisan, and he talked to Joel and had him come on my radio show. Really interesting guy. And Marty, there's nobody like Marty.
Right, yeah. And I'll tell you something. On this show, it was Marty Shore who basically dispelled the myth and said, you know what? A Jewish guy and an Italian guy can be paisans. And we said, you are absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and so. Joe Oldham is the guy's a legend.
Sure. Still wears desert boots, by the way.
Joe Oldham wears desert boots?
Still wears them, that's right. Yes.
Still wears them.
Even out in the desert in California, where he is, he wears desert boots.
Yeah,
fantastic guy.
And Ray does a mean Joe Oldham imitation, too. But don't ask him to do it on the air because it involves a lot of F words.
Oh, okay.
It's a real true-to-form imitation.
It really is. He really does take on the whole persona when he imitates Joe Oldham. But, yeah, we call Marty Shore Uncle Marty.
Yeah.
And the other one was Freddie Macaron.
Yeah, we never had Freddie on the show. We've talked about him and heard about him. Of course, we know his legacy, but we've never had the pleasure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they were the guys, when you read stuff in Pop Mechanics and, you know, performance figures and this and that, it was those guys.
Yeah.
Motor Magazine, and Marty did the Corvette Magazine, and Marty wrote the book on the GNX.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough one day, they took GNX number one out of the museum, and they let us drive it on the track. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking, but they let us drive the car.
It probably handled like a shopping cart with a whistle under the hood, right?
Yeah, I mean, none of those old cars handled. I mean, they're great in a straight line, and the sound and the fury and the bugs in your teeth was great.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as handling or stopping, forget about it.
Right, stopping was also optional.
Yeah.
Well, Joe Oldham covered that in his book, Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver. He dispelled all those myths.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. No, that's great. In fact, when we had Joel on the show a couple of years ago, Joel gave us his typical Joel Rosen interview. It was kind of like buttoned down and factual, and you know, we covered all the facts and figures. I used to be I was a customer at Motion.
Right. Until
on the break we met, he said, hey, you guys are in New York, where are you from? And Chris said he's in Brooklyn. That's it. Joel came back the next segment. All we talked about was him street racing by Erasmus High School.
Yeah.
And bagels and where to get pizza and where to get the best. And then he just, you didn't know it was the same guy.
Yeah, it really was. It was two different interviews. It really was. Because the second interview was so much more casual. And all he wanted to do was talk about Brooklyn. And it's Joel Rosen. So we're like, talk about whatever you want.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so that's what we did. How did you hook up with them, John?
Through Marty. Mm-hmm. Marty, as I said in the beginning, we had difficulty getting cars up here. So I took it upon myself to do it. I mean, I got some stories. When you get another segment another time, I got some stories about what people used to do in the old days to the... Oh, my God. One guy took a car off-roading and called up the manufacturer and says, come and pick up your car. It's stuck out in the woods. Another guy drowned a Dodge Ram out in the ocean. Took it out at low tide and forgot about it. You know, little things like that, you know? So Marty and I became friends, and Marty said, look, I'd like to send some Buicks up to Boston. Will you oversee him and keep an eye on it? So Marty was the first guy, really, that put me into business.
Wow.
And Marty is a very classy guy.
Yes, he is.
You know, he's a good guy. You know, and I credit with, you know, Marty with pretty much putting me in business.
That is amazing. That is high praise indeed that you can make that statement that he actually puts you in business. That is really top notch. It is funny because when we spoke with him, he really was. You absolutely put it the right way. He's a classy guy. He's a polished guy. And we always enjoy. Every time he calls, we snap right to attention. It's like, okay, Marty's on the phone.
Yeah. So. He knows a lot about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he also had some really, you know, while the time I knew him, he had some really cool cars. One was the 67 Corvette 427 that he had, you know, and he had another one. I can't remember what it was. He sold it last year. And then now I think he's got the Ford GT.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he talked about something along the lines of trying to get in and out of it was a chore. Like
that happens as we get older, you know.
Yeah, and Marty is he's long of leg, so.
Yeah, right. Marty's a tall guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we've come to realize we're at that age now that we can't get in and out of a car without making a noise.
Yeah, you know, well, that's the thing. Marty's tall and classy. We're short and stumpy. So we can get in those things easy. I mean, I have a Fiat. Chris has a TR6. We get in those things pretty easily. So.
Oh, yeah. I still drive my 66 Corvette.
Yeah.
And when I get out, I make the noises my father used to make.
Right. Yeah.
My father get up in the morning. It was like an engine stirring to life in the morning.
The old diesel.
Totally.
That happens.
Now
when
we're making the noises.
That happens when I get out of my recliner.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. What the hell's going on?
But so what's going on with you going forward, John? I mean,
How do you fill your days?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're still doing the same. We still do car talk. We got another year. We're putting together shows. You know, and everybody knows Tommy passed away, but there's shows that nobody's ever heard, and they'll be on for a while anyway on NPR.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're all still a pretty tight-knit group. Raymond and I talk, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week, you know. And the rest of it is, you know, I do what everybody else does, you know, put one foot in front of the other, and I do, I still have the fleet of cars that I maintain for the car manufacturers up here in Boston.
Right.
And, you know, and that's just, it beats working, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Sure of that.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, somebody that loves cars, to be around cars all the time, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, I bet you it doesn't. You're absolutely right.
You know, and I've been doing this, this is my 30th year that I've been doing this, and I can't believe how fast the time went.
Wow.
Yeah, it does fly. That, you know, that's how long I've been married, and I said the same thing. Boy, where'd that time go?
Yeah. My father used to tell me, you can tell you're getting old when the cops look like babies.
Right.
He was right.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
That is. No, yeah,
I was actually stopped, because I drive a car that you wouldn't associate with an older guy, I guess. And, you know, and it was part of, they were doing the Highway Patrol was doing a crackdown a few years ago. There was a couple of threats made to the schools, and I happened to be going by one late at night. So they stopped me. And I rolled down the window, of course, interior lights on, rolled the windows down. I had nothing to hide and, you know, hands on the steering wheel. And as the trooper approached me, I looked at him and said, I want to like yell at this kid. He's like, you know, he's like 20 years old.
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing stopping me for? But no, we had a very nice exchange. And of course, he let me go, which was nice. Not like in the past, but.
Most cops, having been one, love automobiles.
Yeah.
They love cars, and they own nice cars, you know, for the most part. And I never quite understood what, I mean, other than the pursuit. I mean, everybody likes to put the lights and siren and go fast. I mean, you know, we'd all do it if we could, you know. But they all like cars, so sometimes when they lay in wait and try to grab something, go by at a high rate of speed, sometimes I think they just want to look at the car.
Right. You know, I can tell you a funny story. It was, I have a 96 Impala SS. And when the car was fairly new, I was part of the Impala Club here on Long Island, and I was driving out to a club meeting early on a Sunday morning. No one on the road. I was on the highway, and I, at the time, those cars came in 3 colors, black being the most common, which mine is. And to make it stand out in a parking lot so I could find it, I had an Impala SS plate on the front of the car where I should have had the regular New York license plate. And, of course, on the highway, a trooper had nothing else to do, pulls me over. And I gave him all the paperwork, showed him the car was legit. And he goes back to his car, and he comes back, and he asks me, where's my front plate? And I said, listen, I'm plead guilty. It's in the trunk. This is why, because of the club. And I said, if you'd like, I'll show it to you. He goes, yeah, would you please open the trunk? No problem. Now, I know crooks are the stupidest people in the world, and I'll open the trunk and expose the cachet of guns, weapons, and drugs. In my case, there was a license plate sitting in the middle of the floor, so I had nothing to fear. Mm-hmm. And he goes back to his car, and I didn't know what the problem was. He came back, and he said, what kind of car is this? I said, well, it's a Chevy Impala. He goes, are you sure? I said, I think I'm sure. I bought it brand new. He goes, you sure this isn't a Thunderbird?
A Thunderbird?
He thought the car was... Some people used to confuse those cars for T-Birds because of the overall shape.
You're kidding? Oh,
yeah. And he thought... He was checking the VIN. He was going to, he was going to call in auto crimes. He thought I did some kind of a scam. And again, he was a young guy, and I wanted to tell him, if you knew what the hell you were looking at, we wouldn't be... You let me get the hell on the way to go to this car meeting. Well, I was able to go, and everything was fine, but it was just one of those scratch-your-head moments.
That is pretty amazing. No, it's...
And most people do that have really nice cars. They put some kind of a plate on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And I know everybody's supposed to have two for the most part, but a lot of people don't. And I think most of them will cut you some slack and say, go home, put the right plate on it,
Yeah.
It looks terrible on the front, but hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Right.
And
right.
The irony, John, is that I drive an old police car.
Do you?
Oh, yes.
What do you drive?
It's an old Dodge. It's a Hemi Dodge.
Well, it's not that old.
Well, it's old to...
It's new.
It's an 08. So, but yeah, and I truly love it. I always say it's the safest car on the road.
When I first went on the police department, I got a hand-me-down. I got a Chevy Malibu with a 350 and a 4-barrel in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just the nicest... That was a nice, nice car.
Sure.
Yeah. The year after that, they took them away from us, and they gave us Ford Fairmonts. Do you remember those?
Oh, yes.
Ford Fairmont.
What did you guys do to piss off management?
The bad guys used to run beside us and flip us off.
Right.
Yeah, one of the slowest road slugs you'd find on the road. I'm sure it was a straight six and pretty much nothing else.
Well, nothing happened at all. No.
they could have bought Yugos. That would have been worse.
I'll tell you what they did do. Two departments here in Massachusetts bought Checkers.
Oh.
Most of them mysteriously caught fire behind the station.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys were, moonlighting as hacks.
Yeah.
Put those checker decals on.
I had a guy that used to do that one night, and I caught him. This is a true story. He'd park his cruiser, and he'd get into a cab. He used to rent cabs at night, and I caught him.
Wow.
He was running a cab at night while he was working.
Oh, wow. That's something.
Hard to believe, I know.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Yep. But no, I mean, 30 years with Car Talk went by in a snap, and it gave me opportunities that I couldn't even imagine, some of the people that we would meet and some of the places that we went. I mean, I'm really grateful for all those years. I met a lot of nice people that really loved the show. And you know what? People that listen to the show, you couldn't say this type of person listens to Car Talk, because I'd meet doctors and lawyers and nuns and young kids that said that they were subjected to listening to Car Talk when they went everywhere when they were kids, and they're in a 12-step program now. But I think they're going
to
be all right.
Well, I tell you, that's one thing. I always force my wife to listen when we're in the car on a, on a Saturday morning, and she's like, that again? I'm like, listen, I'm taking notes. It's a professional, I'm doing professional practices here.
Yeah, John, you realize, yes, some of them were in a 12-step program, but some are much worse. You know why? They become radio hosts.
Yeah.
That can happen.
They do shows like
that
this.
I don't know if there's a cure for that.
I don't think so, but you know what? We're not looking for it either, because we're having fun. And I'll tell you, John, I will speak for my co-host Chris and throw it out to you that at any time, if you ever want to come on this show and break some news or break wind even, I don't know, whatever you want to do.
We do that too.
I appreciate that.
And throw something out. You have our numbers and our contacts, and please, you're more than welcome to use us as an outlet for
because
you.
Basically we're a bunch of Ginzaloons, and we bring people in. Come on in. Put more water in a sauce. So no problem. We're good. Sit down.
You guys are a lot of fun, and I would come back anytime.
John, thank you so much. Thank
you. All right, Paisans.
All righty, my brother. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, John.
All right. Talk soon. Thank you so much.
Be well. All right.
Bye-bye. John Bugsy Lawler, the technical, spiritual, and menu advisor of Car Talk. Wow.